on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's our producer. Stephen Esposito is the executive director, wealth advisor, and senior portfolio management director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Stephen, welcome back. How are you today?
Thank you to have me back. I'm good. How about you, John?
Pretty good, although I saw a headline this morning. It said the stock market is in a scary place right now. Do you agree with that, and what does that even mean?
I don't know if I agree with scary. I would say scary is good because it gets you bargains. You can find some pretty cheap stocks when people are afraid. It's when everybody's excited and anxious is when you pay up for things, and I prefer to buy in the scariest markets of all, but I don't view it as scary at all. No. I think there's a lot of bargains, and I think the future looks pretty good 6, 12, 18 months out.
Yeah, maybe that's not what we're looking at when we say that, because for the last couple of weeks, the markets, the indices have been closing down. Am I reading too much into that, or are the people that are writing these stories reading too much into that?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's too much pessimism out there for what's going on. I mean, of course, the Delta variant does make you pessimistic and scared. But I think our scientists and our medical people will get this done and get it behind us. I mean, we got a vaccine in 9 months, and I think we're going to go forward. 75% are vaccinated. So I'd look at the positive on that. I think the majority of the bad is behind us. But you got supply chain issues. You've got labor shortage issues, 10 million open jobs, Chinese regulatory crackdown, Middle East tension, $5 gas. All of that weighs on consumer confidence. But I think you got to look beyond that. Look to the other side. And if we get over these humps and supply chains, we'll catch up. The labor will catch up. All of it will catch up. And I think the outside of that, you could see an explosion in GDP on the other side. So that's where I'm putting money in the cyclical places where they're going to benefit the most.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that. Although the indexes are kind of high right now, the three big indices we talk about, aren't they?
They are, and their multiples are high. But the indices don't really tell you what's going on in the market. The S&P 500 is five companies, of which five of those 500 dominate. The Russell 1000, 38% of that index is five companies. The other 995 is the other 6.2, and a $10 million portfolio, that's a 6.2 million. So you see the lopsidedness of the indices. Underneath the surface, where there are thousands of companies, is where you want to be. And you want to look at many of those companies that are simply off the radar that I think will be coming on relatively quickly as people adjust to the earnings per share growth that's going to be there.
Are you talking about ETFs or individual stocks? What are you talking about?
Individual areas. Nobody seems to be doing that. Everybody's paying attention just by indexes. And if you buy an index, you have X number of stocks in it. So by sheer definition, the more people that pour money into strict ETFs and indexes, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The problem is there are thousands of other companies that aren't really part of those index, or if they are, they're a very small percentage, is where you're finding the opportunities. And so I think you can have a stealth bull market that outperformed the indices pretty easy, which is what the cyclical did up until June. From September to last year till June, the stocks underneath the surface substantially outperformed the so-called indexes. The last 100 days, because of the Delta variant and all the other factors we discussed, cause the indexes to lead again because they're top-heavy. Now, I think going forward, the indexes will underperform the broad market.
What cyclicals are you talking about?
I would look at the autos. I would look at that sector. That is going to perform well when the supply chain once again catches up. The valuations are cheap, and the potential for demand is great. If you look at anything bricks and mortar, retail sales were better than expected, ex-autos, and if you put autos in, they would have been even better than expected. Financials, rates will go up. Not a lot, but enough to make the profit margins better in the financial sector, insurance. You look at some traditional old line tech names that are out there, and I think there's so many good companies, travel leisure, that has come off its highs. You know, the stocks that 6-7 months ago people wished they would have bought at the height of the pandemic, and they didn't. Now they've got an opportunity to buy back in those, not at the lows of the pandemic, but they're still pretty far off their highs. And yet I think the future of their earnings is going to be even better than was originally anticipated going forward. So I think that's where the bargains are.
Although last April, all you had to do was buy an index fund. I mean, last April, if you had just bought the Dow, if you had just bought some of the traditional markers, the tide did rise on all of those, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. But actually, underneath the surface, performance was substantially better.
Yeah,
I did a study. Well, I mean, I'm talking multiple returns because so many of the cyclicals, the small mid-cap companies, went from $20, $30 a share down to $3. and then they came back dramatically. So you didn't get the drop in many of the top-end index stocks, but they also didn't perform as well. So you had a wider swing from top to bottom. And there's some pretty large companies out there whose valuations are still very cheap, 8, 9, 10 times earnings, when they're growing over 20, 30% earnings. That's where the bargains are. And that's, like you said, people are buying indexes, they're buying ETFs, they're avoiding the broad market, and there are thousands of companies that aren't incorporated in those indices that are being ignored, that I think that's where the bargains are.
We'll pick it up here in a minute with Stephen Esposito. That may be in part because we don't have the confidence or the knowledge, and so you just bet the whole market and hope things go well. Stephen Esposito is the Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, and Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. And he is, I don't know if bullish is the right word to hear you talk, Stephen, but if the horizon is long enough, and you said maybe 12, 18 months, you are very positive on where things are right now. Is that right?
Absolutely, sir. I've learned in all my almost 40 years of doing this, every opportunity to make large sums of money was in crisis mode. When everybody is selling, you got to look at and pick among the rubble of what you like and then look out to the future. And most of bear market typically lasts is a couple, 3 years, and therefore those are the opportunities. So if you're a longer-term investor, which is what my clients are, we look for opportunities in the kind of companies we've talked about in the sectors. But I'm also, the other thing I should have mentioned, is the dividend income. You know, nobody's earning anything on bonds right now. So if I can earn dividends of 2, 3, 4, 5% and supplement that lack of bond income, it's the best of all worlds. I mean, you can find that right now in a zero interest rate environment.
Are you looking at some of the cyclicals when you say that? Who's paying that?
Just anything. If you look at anything from, as I'm looking at healthcare. Healthcare is not as cyclical, but the dividends there are pretty good. And because of all the talk in Washington about pricing and price controls they've been talking about for 30 years, and it rarely ever happens, some of the valuations, P.E. ratios, and dividends are pretty healthy across the board, and you can find them out there. You just got to look for them. You got to know where to look and make sure whoever's handling your money is looking for those opportunities to get that cash flow on top of the gains you hope to get.
You were describing earlier the people that are just playing the indexes, just saying, well, I'll just go with the Dow or the S&P. And you said that there's plenty of value underneath those top stocks, which are pulling it up or maybe holding it down. And you talked about the automotive sector. I think that's something we can all relate to. We all have cars or vans or whatever, and we know that the inventory is down and that some people do have money on the sidelines. And when they start to put more vehicles on the lots, that those cars are going to sell. Heck, some people are selling their used cars right now for more than they paid for them. It's crazy. So I can relate to that. I wonder if that's all I need to know, or do I need to now know if Ford or Toyota or Chevrolet are the ones to put my money on?
Well, the answer is yes all the way around. I mean, you're right. Sometimes your own research and experiences can help you towards the situation. Ironically, I was talking to my wife earlier, and she drove by a Range Rover dealership we know. And she said there wasn't a single car on the lot. Now imagine when they start selling 200, 300, 400 cars at a time, what that's going to do to GDP. Then you have the domino effect of that, all the employees coming back to work that aren't there. And then the sale of a car and then, you know, all the support, the service, all of those factors combined. You have this velocity of the money turning, just like restaurants. I know that are closed for Sundays and Mondays now because they don't have any help. And that business will improve.
This supply chain thing is really a conundrum, though, isn't it? I hear the end of the year, it'll start to iron out, and I hear 2 years out before this thing actually gets back to normal. What's your read on that, Stephen?
You know, one thing I love about capitalism, it works. And I don't think it'll be 2 years. It's not even close to 2 years. Will it be perfect? It never is. But they'll catch up because there's a lot of money in it. I don't think you're going to see a lot of car dealers knocking 10,000 off list for you. So the margins are pretty good there. So that'll be a very positive form. So where there's a return, there's a reward. And so whoever's the most efficient in the world, the supply chain, will do the best. And there's a lot of financial incentive to do that. So I do think they will catch up much quicker. I mean, again, we had a vaccine in 9 months. We were told 5 years.
So I think another wild card in this conversation, though, are these employment numbers. Are the people going to come back? Will they come back at such a higher rate that it'll hurt earnings, or will they come back at all? It's a very strange place right now, those employment numbers.
You know, that's a great question. But look at it this way. Everybody is making more money now, which I think is fantastic. I mean, a lot more. They've got some pretty substantial raises. Going forward, I think companies can absorb that because the consumer is flush with cash. There's trillions of dollars out there. And if they're all making more money, they'll be spending more money. And when they go to more restaurants and go buy more clothes, that'll have a domino effect as well. So I do think it's a positive, and I don't believe inflation's an issue. So, yeah, you're correct. I think going forward, more money, people will go back to work. A lot of the supplemental unemployment went away on September 6th. So either the population shrank dramatically, but we've got to fill 10 million jobs. And by the way, I think that number of jobs required is actually going to go up as we recover out of this economy. And remember, too, Europe is still closed down for all intents and purposes, Canada, Australia, parts of Asia. So imagine when the world starts rotating its wheels again, all the demand that's going to come from here and there. So I'm very bullish on the economy going forward. And again, barring anything out of left field, we don't know, some potential conflict in the South China Sea, something along those lines, God forbid, in 9/11. But looking out over the horizon, I think there's some positives, but you want to be in the right companies. And a lot of them, like I said, are not dominating the indexes, and that's why they're cheap.
Yeah. Just one last thing. I have less than a minute left, but I heard earlier this week that the concern about inflation is there are people out there that are more concerned about inflation than you are, particularly on the production side, that for companies that are actually making goods or providing services, they are seeing inflation more than maybe I am as an average consumer right now. And that's eventually going to catch up with all of us. Again, your thoughts about that?
I think inflation is going to be transitory again. It may last a little bit longer until we catch up, but as we catch up, things will happen. Remember, 12 years ago, we were told oil was at 150, was going to 500, and by the year 2020, we'd be out of it. And then last year, we went to negative 37. Now we're back up to 71. So because I've been through so many of these predictions of doom and gloom in 4 decades, yeah, I don't let them affect me as much anymore. I try to think that my job is to stay with my, you know, my navigation systems on and not get caught up in all the hype and the rhetoric. And there's a lot of that in today's news world. So yeah, I got to look through it all, and I'm telling you, I see on the other side, I see some rosier times.
Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Nice to talk to you, Stephen. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
John Williams. Larry Chester joins us now, President and CFO at CFOSimplified.com. Hey, Larry, welcome back. How are you today?
Hey, John, I'm doing fine. How are you doing on this bright, sunny day?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we were talking earlier, Larry. This is one of the maybe last great surefire weekends of summer, on the last weekend of summer, for that matter.
No, I understand, and we have plans to be out in the weather this weekend as well, so I hope you get a chance.
Yeah. I was reading some of the stuff you wrote on your website about the attack on businesses over the last 18 months. But it sounds like you are appreciative of all of the efforts that the government has made. And I don't read that you think that the government overreached either. What's your thoughts about all of this?
Well, I don't really think the government overreached. I think that they needed to make some strong, decisive action quickly. And I think they did it. I think, you know, it's very easy to be, to be a prognosticator after the fact. You know, history always provides us with 20/20 glasses, but I think in order to be able to be decisive, to be able to prevent things from happening, I think there's always risk involved, and I think the risk here was small with a great result. I think a lot of businesses survived that wouldn't have otherwise. I think people ended up with safety nets, and businesses were able to provide them with safety nets because the PPP money was there, and there were loans available from either the EIDL or now the ERC tax credits. These are all things that help businesses out, and I think banks were, by the same token, much more flexible with businesses, and the regulatory authorities were giving banks the freedom to be able to be flexible with businesses. Unfortunately, I think that's all going to come to an end soon.
Unfortunately, but maybe its time is due, right? I mean, do you think that, you say, for instance, that you believe these government programs staved off a depression. Have they done the job and it's now time to roll them back?
Well, I think they certainly have staved off the depression. I mean, think about what would have happened to individual income, which then leads to consumer spending, if more businesses had gone out of business because they were forced to shut down as a result of the pandemic and literally go out of business. I think that would have created a real disaster across the country. And I think that the government programs were able to provide businesses with money. I know in my particular case, even the PPP loan that we got, I provided to my employees. So they had that money that they used to be able to pay their rent and their expenses going forward. And I think that was critical. The situation is that the government has put a ceiling and a terminal point on all of these programs. There is no more PPP money available. The grants that they gave to consumers, these checks for $1,400 in child care expenses that they gave to individuals and for children, that's all gone now. So people have gotten the money in their pockets. I think people need to find ways of going back to work, and businesses need to continue to hire. I don't think there's any programs that are still in the works right now for the government to give additional funding to people. I mean, the unemployment additional payments that were made have all come to an end now as of the middle of September.
I guess we still do have unemployment compensation. We do have unemployment benefits, but we don't have the additional $300, and the extensions have largely lapsed, although there are vestiges of that in the marketplace. Maybe they are already funded and not necessarily new dollars. But, for instance, there is a $1,000 stipend that the state of Illinois will make sure that daycare providers get as they try and encourage people to stay in that field or enter the field. If we want the parents to go to work, some of them need daycare. There aren't enough people doing that. Here we go again. It's such a conundrum of trying to find ways to entice people, Larry, to get back into the workplace.
And I think that's really an ironic situation. You know, there's so many people that are hungry to get jobs. And I talk to business owners all the time who are telling me that they'd love to hire people if they could only find people to hire. And so I think the ending of some of these government programs, and the one that you mentioned, you know, for daycare is just a way for businesses, very specific businesses, to be able to provide services to employees who are going back to work in terms of providing daycare. I think that supports businesses and supports employees. I think as people get to the point where they realize that there's no more of this extended unemployment, these extended add-on benefits, and that there's no more moratorium for evictions, and people have to get money to be able to pay their daily expenses, and I think that's going to force people to go back to work.
What's your advice for businesses right now, then, as we enter the fourth quarter anyway? What's your either forecast or what's your best advice for these businesses?
Well, I think the one thing that businesses need to do is be able to watch their accounts receivable. You don't want to be, if you're a business owner, you don't want to be in a position where your business is at risk because somebody else hasn't watched out for their business, and therefore they're not able to pay the bills that they owe you. So reassessing a credit policy and making sure that the customers that you have continue to pay their bills on a timely basis. The other thing is being in a position where you conserve cash, so that you use that money to either pay down, use the cash you have to pay down bank loans that you have to be able to extend your line of credit or enlarge your line of credit, and also be able to be in a position where you have cash available down the road as opportunities present themselves. And that goes along with controlling inventory and watching inventory. There's a shortage of inventory and raw materials across the board right now, and I think it's going to take some time for things to get caught up. You know, you remember the shortages of toilet paper. Well, you walk into the store now, there's no shortage now. You know, it took time for people to get up to the point where they were producing that extra product. And I think that's going to happen too, and the market will reset itself. But in the meantime, business owners need to watch their inventory and make sure that they're able to deliver to their customers. But you certainly don't want to be overly enthusiastic about buying inventory and using up the extra cash that you have. And the last thing I'd say is cross-train your staff so that if you lose staff, you've got people available in your company to be able to do those required services that you need to. You know, there are going to be some interesting opportunities that are going to present themselves for business owners, too, in this last quarter. As businesses fail, and there will be businesses that fail in the fourth quarter, there's going to be an opportunity for business owners who have been prudent and have built up cash reserves and maintained solid relationships with their banks to be able to buy customers, be able to buy product lines, and be able to buy competition to be able to strengthen themselves in the marketplace. And only those people who've been prudent enough to be able to conserve their cash and put together a solid balance sheet during this time and not be overly aggressive in expanding their businesses are going to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Spoken like CFO, Larry Chester is the president of CFO Simplified, if you need one. That's what Larry does, CFOSimplified.com. Okay, Larry, let's talk again another day. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks a lot, John. I always enjoy it.
I do, too. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. We've got more business news. We've got Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Northbrook-based Allstate estimates a $1.4 billion gross loss caused by Hurricane Ida. The destruction over 19 states is the costliest tropical disaster for the insurer since Superstorm Sandy. Allstate will absorb only part of the cost thanks to its arrangement with reinsurers. They'll cover hundreds of millions of dollars of the cost. Allstate estimates net catastrophe losses at $876 million, $692 million after taxes. Total insured losses from Ida across other insurers are estimated at between $31 billion and $44 billion. The last Sears department store is set to shut its doors for good here in the retailer's home state of Illinois. The shop located in the Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg will close permanently on November 14th, according to the Hoffman Estates-based retailer's parent company, Transform Co. Sears Holdings filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in 2018. Sears was founded in Chicago in the 1890s, selling everything from toys to home goods to clothing. At one time, Sears was the nation's largest retailer with thousands of stores spread out across the U.S. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got your business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yep, Mr. Fizz Friday, John. We check in with our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell, to see what's on his mind.
I'm here. We need to talk about safety. It's National Farm Safety Week coming up.
Yeah, in fact, next week is Safety Week, and it corresponds with harvest, which can be an especially dangerous time. I suppose it applies to farmers of all kinds.
Right. It's just as important for us gardeners and small property owners as it is for big producers, because it's far too easy to get in a hurry and to do things without thinking, and this can really quickly get us in trouble. First thing I want to talk about a little bit is hand and garden tools. They need to be sharpened to make them safer to use, because if you don't have them sharp, you have to use too much effort. You need to use them as intended. Don't use a knife as a screwdriver, for instance. I know of a case where a gentleman decided that it was too hard to trim hedges with a hedge shear. He thought this rotary mower would work just fine. So he turned it on, decided he would pick it up, sticking his fingers under the shroud, and sure enough, it worked real well. Took his fingers off.
Ooh.
And when you're doing things where you have the opportunity to hurt something, be sure that you wear clothing that will sustain the damage so it doesn't damage you. Don't be in a hurry. Prepare ahead of time for what you're going to do. Clear the area of any obstructions, kids and pets. Keep your eyes open and your head on a swivel, always being aware of your surroundings.
Jim says we also need to be careful with the various lawn and garden chemicals, many of which can be deadly, so read the label. As for big farm safety, there was a car combine accident near Morton, Illinois, Wednesday night. A car hit a combine on Queenwood Road on the south side of Morton. Car burst into flames. The driver died. The combine driver was not injured. Speaking of Morton, tomorrow's the wrap-up of the 55th annual Morton Pumpkin Festival. Morton is the pumpkin capital of the world, if you didn't know, just outside Peoria. Grand finale includes a pumpkin pancake breakfast, a parade, and a pie-eating contest. Whoever eats the most pumpkin pie in 90 seconds is the winner. It's not pretty. In fact, I've watched some of last year's video. It's kind of disgusting. No hands allowed. Big fun in Morton, though. Chicago were to trade wheat, corn, and beans all lower today. Corn right now down about 3 cents. Beans are down 10, and wheat is down 2. From the farm to your belly, today is National Apple Dumpling Day. Also, National Monte Cristo Sandwich Day. Have a great weekend. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
This is Elliot Richardson, co-founder and president of the Small Business Advocacy Council. Hi, Elliot. This is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
John, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
I hope you've had a good week. Tomorrow is the last day of Small Business Week. How's it been going?
Well, you know, from my perspective, John, every week should be Small Business Week. I love the attention that Small Business Week does put on local businesses and small businesses. So that's great. We encourage people to shop locally, to buy locally. And of course, John, as always, we're pushing legislative initiatives that will help small and local businesses recover from this pandemic and thrive in the future.
So what are those? What can government, what can we all do to make small businesses more viable?
Well, we put together a package, and we've sent that package over to leadership in the Illinois Senate, to leadership in the Illinois House. There's a laundry list of things that we can do. You know, first and foremost, we need to make sure that those back-to-business grants that are put together to help small businesses recover, we have to hope that that program is adequately funded so that, you know, the government isn't picking winners and losers and all struggling and qualified businesses get the help that they need. We're pushing occupational licensing reform. Mm-hmm. Let's unleash Illinois' entrepreneurs and make it easier for people to start and own a business and to grow a business and, frankly, just to get to work.
Yeah.
We're pushing a program to help small businesses retrain and hire folks who have lost their jobs or businesses because of the pandemic. Your earlier guest really hit on that. You know, we need people in the workforce. Because businesses are having trouble hiring people right now, and we want to get folks back to work. So that's some of the things that we're working on. I've got more, but I gave you a highlight
sure.
of some of the things in our package.
Well, I think that retraining thing is really interesting because as we all try and, you know, figure out where these employees are and what does it take to get them back into the various workplaces, maybe retraining is part of it as people have cycled out of the work, There's a lot of people that just aren't going to come back because they don't have to or because they've retired or they don't want to. But maybe to fill those positions, we need training. But you also mentioned something I think is really interesting, and it's occupational licensing reform. I think that Illinois and Chicago are a little too strict on the licensing for some occupations. It sounds like that's what you're looking at.
Absolutely. Illinois is really behind the curve on licenses. And first of all, it's too easy to put together and put on the books a new license right now. There's a bill that we're pushing, John, that would really allow the department that handles that in Illinois to take a much closer look before a new license, you know, blocks people out from entering into a new profession if there's no reason for that license. We want to encourage people to come to Illinois. So making it easier if you're qualified to practice in a profession in a different state, we want that person to come into Chicago and come into Illinois. So we're pushing for reciprocity like many other states have done. When an occupational license is up for renewal, let's take a look at that because you just said it. It is too strict. An occupational license should protect the safety, the health, and the welfare of the public. Not shut folks out. And, you know, you always hear this example of barbers. And it's just a perfect example. You know, if you're a barber or a hairstylist in another state and you want to mm-hmm. cut hair in Illinois, you have to do 1,500 hours of education. And that can cost thousands of dollars. It's ridiculous. So that's something that we can do to help our economy recover from the pandemic and get people back to work.
What's the best website for folks to stay in touch with you, to help you and help businesses, Elliot? How do we do that?
SBACIL.org is a great way to get in touch with us. If you reach out to us, fill out a form, we'll get back to you. And we want to hear from you. You know, we want to hear from the public. What can we do to empower small businesses and to get people back to work and to support the small business community?
SmallBusinessAdvocacyCouncil.org. Okay, Elliot, good luck to you. Elliot Richardson, thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John.